This morning we have a guest speaker. There are a lot of pastors and people that have influenced my life, but I can say with a fair amount of certainty, without this pastor, you would not have a pastor. I am 38 years old, and I've known this person for 38 years. Because this morning we have the privilege of hearing from Michael Simone, my dad. He is a dad, he is a grandfather, he is an author, he is a pastor. He would want me to tell you he is a Yankees fan. Where are the boos? Come on now. And we had a lot of great times and moments growing up. He took me to many a ball game, and he will continue that tradition. This afternoon, I have a wedding rehearsal, and so he'll be taking his grandchildren to the William & Mary Towson game. William & Mary had a great win on Friday night, if you happen to be there. Just thought I'd slip that in. And hopefully we'll continue the great play in the as the conference season gets going here. But what an opportunity to learn from someone who has meant so much to me. I've told you before, he is the author of many great leadership axioms and likes to speak leadership wisdom. My favorite one that I know some of you like as well goes like this: Travis, relationships are hard, leadership is hard, life is hard. That's it. That's all you really need to know. And he has a message for us today that was originally entitled Tipping Point. And I pray that this could be a tipping point for our church as we head into the new year and the next 40 years of what Jesus wants to do in this congregation. So would you please stand to honor the reading of God's word? Our scripture reading today comes from 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. A little known story that I think will pack a great punch for us today. And the easiest way to read with me is it is printed on the back of the card that you were handed as you came in this morning. So if you want to follow along on the screens or right on the card you were handed as you came to church this morning. 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. Now the wife of one of the sons of the prophets cried to Elisha, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord. But the creditor has come to take my two children to be his slaves." And Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what have you in the house?" And she said, "Your servant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil." Then he said, "Go outside, borrow vessels from all your neighbors, empty vessels, and not too few. Then go in and shut the door behind yourself and your sons, and pour into all these vessels. And when one is full, set it aside." So she went from him and shut the door behind herself and her sons. And as she poured, they brought the vessels to her. When the vessels were full, she said to her son, "Bring me another vessel." And he said to her, "There is not another." Then the oil stopped flowing. She came and told the man of God, and he said, "Go, sell the oil and pay your debts, and you and your sons can live on the rest." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Let's welcome our guest speaker, Michael Simone.
Well, you might be wondering how you got me this morning. Well, it's very simple. They asked Travis to do it. Travis said, "I'm maxed out." They asked Hunter to do it. Hunter said, "I'm maxed out." They asked Rich. Rich said, "I'm maxed out." They asked Claude. Claude said, I'm maxed out." They asked Doug. Doug said, "I'm maxed out. I'm starting a new church." They asked Wes. He said, "I'm maxed out." Well, I got news for you. I'm maxed out. I am maxed out because Christmas doesn't start for me in December. It's a long run. Travis and Nina had the great parental vision to have all their children in the last quarter of the year. So we actually start in October with Ruthie's birthday and presents. Then we go to November for Olivia's birthday and presents, followed quickly by Leela's birthday and presents, followed by Thanksgiving, and Black Friday, followed by Sophia and her birthday and presents, and then Christmas. And we came up here like Santa's sleigh with the car loaded down. And then they came down the day after Christmas and moved in to our house, and more things were happening. And Mary Poppins was happening, and French toast was happening. I am maxed out. Somebody bring me some figgy pudding. I don't even know what it is, but I've been singing about it for a long time. I'd like to find out. A tipping point is where everything is on the line. Everything shifts, whether it's expected or unexpected. It can enter stage left with great joy or great anxiety. It's the agony or the ecstasy all the time. Tipping points are the very things that define our lives. So let me tell you the story of a tipping point, because everyone comes to a tipping point sooner or later. The day before he died, he was talking to her about the future. He spoke words of comfort into her heart about how he would always be there to provide for her, and then their sons would take care of them until they went to be with the Lord. His smile was gentle. He gently touched her shoulder. A quiet peace warmed the room. The lone oil lamp flickered a blessing. That night, she dreamed of sailing on a ship to a far port, a port she had only heard about from her friends. When she arrived far away from home, surrounded by unfamiliar sights and sounds, she was alone. She awoke feverish and anxious just before dawn. In the darkness, she couldn't hear her husband breathing. She took a deep breath, touching his neck and feeling it cold, she whispered a prayer. My husband served you well, Lord. Please do not leave me alone and afraid like I felt in my dream. Gentle light easing over the hill allowed her to see the outline of a man who had loved God fervently all his days. He was now motionless next to her. The future he had described just yesterday was stolen by one of life's inevitable twists, one of life's quick turns. And yet she knew one thing: the Lord would provide. She had heard it from his lips 1,000 times. The Lord will provide. He makes a way. He is the only one who can make a way for us. The dawn bid the new day come. She waited a few moments, dressed, and went to tell her friends what had happened. Her sons were still asleep. It's 849 BC, and 2 Kings 4 gives us a poignant tipping point story. Let me read it to you one more time this morning. Now the wife of one of the sons of the prophets cried to Elisha, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord. But the creditor has come to take my two children to be his slaves." And Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what have you in the house?" And she said, "Your servant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil." Then he said, "Go outside, borrow vessels from all your neighbors, empty vessels, and not too few. Then go in and shut the door behind yourself and your sons and pour into all these vessels. And when one is full, set it aside." So she went from him and shut the door behind her, behind herself and her sons, and as she poured, they brought the vessels to her. When the vessels were full, she said to her son, "Bring me another vessel." And he said to her, "There is not another." Then the oil stopped flowing. She came and told the man of God, and he said, "Go sell the oil and pay your debts, and you and your sons can live on the rest." We all come to a tipping point sooner or later. Elisha had his own tipping point. We find it in 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 19 through 21. So Elijah had just had his own tipping point. And he had this great victory in 1 Kings 18, stunning victory over the prophets of the false god. And he must have had that moment of great joy as he saw God in a tipping point moment define his life. And then he gets that note about his life will be taken from him, from Jezebel. And so he runs away and he meets God in the wilderness in the quiet. And God says, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And he has to learn all over again who he is and what God has called him to. And when he gets that squared away at his tipping point, now he calls Elisha. So Elijah went from there and found Elisha, son of Shaphat. He was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen, and he himself was driving the 12th pair. Elijah went up to him and threw his cloak around him. Elisha then left his oxen and ran after Elijah. "Let me kiss my father and mother goodbye," he said, "and then I will come with you." "Go back," Elijah replied. Go back. What have I done to you?" In other words, I can wait a few moments here. Go back. So Elisha left him and went back. He took his yoke of oxen and slaughtered them. He burned the plowing equipment to cook the meat and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he set out to follow Elijah and became his servant. This was Elisha's tipping point. And so often we run through a story like this, and there's some details that we want to slow down just a moment for and go back and pay attention to. And I like these details, that he took his yoke of oxen and slaughtered them. He burned the plowing equipment to cook the meat and gave it to the people, and they ate. Imagine the smell of the meat cooking on an open fire. Imagine all the people gathering around, because word got out fast that something was going on with Elisha. So they all gathered around. They saw him cutting up the wood and putting the meat on the fire. And then they smelled it too. And then he was giving them all this great outdoor barbecue experience. Just imagine being there. Imagine the drama. Imagine the moment. Feel the intensity of that tipping point. I had a tipping point happen to me in 1993. In 1993, I was really trying to figure out, what am I supposed to do with the rest of my ministry career? What am I supposed to accomplish? What are the goals? And I went back and forth with God trying to figure it all out. And I thought maybe I could go be a chaplain at a university up in Pennsylvania. I had that opportunity on the table. Maybe I should start a Christian counseling center right here in Virginia Beach. But God was doing something different. I was at a tipping point. And in a phone call with my sister in New Jersey, it all just came to the fore. She was talking about a church that was starting there. And when she talked about a church starting there and they were going to the church, it was just as if God punched me in the heart hard. And I just felt this thud in my heart. And I heard the voice of God in my brain say, "Michael, do what's in your heart. Do what's in your heart." And I looked and I knew what was in my heart. It was to be in a church that was at the intersection of sacred history and secular culture. It was to be in a church where people could come with their questions and learn how to figure out the questions to the knotty theological questions that somehow beset us for century upon century. It was to be in a church where community was a value that was high and lifted up, where we would take risks together and see God do amazing things because of the amazing God that he is. And when God said, "Michael, do what's in your heart," it was the tipping point of my life. And it has been that for the last 25 years. My wife walked into the kitchen and we sat at the table and I said, "I think this is what we should do. We should start a church." And she said, "Yes, I agree with that. I believe that we should do that." And Travis and Ashley, they became the first members because they were stuck. They had to be in the experience together. And it's just such an amazing thing. And I remember the day Travis said to me, we were into the church experience, Spring Branch Community Church, about 3 or 4 months. And he was the cameraman. He would film the services. And he looked at me and he said, "Dad, you should have done this a long time ago." And so it was a tipping point. It was just this amazing moment. And every one of us comes to a tipping point sooner or later. that woman, the widow now, who had the transformation of the oil change her life. She was at that tipping point. Elisha was at his tipping point long ago with Elijah. And you are at a tipping point today. Let me tell you the lessons of the tipping point. The first tipping point lesson is this. You will be challenged to believe something bigger than you've ever believed because God is in the business of doing big things. Challenged to believe something bigger than you've ever believed because God is in the business of doing big things. This brings me to the question of God's will. How do you know God's will? How do you know what he's calling you to do that's big? Well, there's two sides to God's will. There's the side of what God's will is not, or what I call the false assumptions of God's will. And then there's the side of this is what I really do know about God's will. Allow me to look with you at both sides of the equation. The false assumptions of God's will. God's will always make you feel better. You might not feel better at all, but God is calling you into something amazing. God's will won't be difficult. Oh, it'll be like a piece of cake. It'll be like a cakewalk at a county fair. It's going to be hard. God's will won't take sacrifice of epic proportions. Emphasis on two words, epic proportions. God's will takes tremendous sacrifice. We need to get back to those sacrifices that the generation that we call the greatest generation gave so that we could live in a free country, that we could stand up for what is right and what is good for the whole world. God's will won't take a long time. God's will can take decades to unfold. As you know, God's will can take centuries to unfold, and we can be a part of a little sliver of it right here, right now. God's will is done by someone else. It's by a pastor. It's by a missionary. God's will isn't done by someone else. This is a false assumption. God's will doesn't ask hard questions. God's will asks the hardest questions. God's will always shows you the results first, so you know everything. No, you don't know everything. You can't even see over the horizon. You can't see around the bend in the road. And God says, go. And that's why faith is part of the experience of God's will. God's will doesn't need strategic planning. It needs tons of strategic planning. God's will isn't scientific or architectural or artistic. One of my bucket list items was, I want to go to the Louvre and see the Mona Lisa. And so about 10 years ago or so, we were on a trip to Paris, and it was going to happen. I was going to see the Mona Lisa. So we went, we bought our tickets, we got into the great museum, so much to see, but I sought out and I found her. I found her in her room, and there was a line to get to see her, and because she wasn't that big. You think she's big, and if you've been there, you know she's rather small painting. And so you get down to the front, but they keep moving you along. So you get up to the Mona Lisa, you go, oh, and then they move you away. So then I went around back, got in the back of the line, and I went up again. And I got there again, and I saw her, and I looked in her eyes, and she looked in my eyes, and then I went around. And then it hit me. I wonder what the Mona Lisa looks at all day long while everybody's looking at her. And so I stood next to her, off to the side just a little bit, stood next to her, and I saw what Mona Lisa sees all day long. You know who she sees? She sees Jesus all day long. There's Jesus right in front of her. The wedding of Cana, where he's about to turn water into wine. It's the largest picture in the Louvre, the largest painting in the Louvre. It's huge. She looks right at Jesus at that wedding. If you look to the right, she looks to the right, she sees Jesus. Multiple pictures of Jesus. If she looks to the left, she sees Jesus, because it's Jesus that is always at the tipping point. It's Jesus that is there because God created science. God created science for us to know and understand things that are too big for us to understand. It's why we can try our best to understand the universe, and we can learn some things and understand some things, but there's so much that is a mystery. And sometimes we walk into these great cathedrals and we see the architecture, and it's high and lifted up, and it looks up to an almighty God who does great things in our lives, who touches our lives with grace. And we see the paintings of the artists who were overwhelmed with all the scenes from the Gospels and all the scenes from the Bible for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so we can look at a Rembrandt. We could look at a Goetz, a Sigismund Goetz, which we'll look at in just a few moments, and we could see just the passion of God's story being told again in our lifetime. Let me tell you what I know about God's will. It's not a mission impossible, although sometimes it does look that way. And it should look that way, because otherwise we don't need God in the equation. God's will takes everybody on the same page all the time, and God's will takes everybody pulling in the same direction. Everybody on the same page. Everybody pulling in the same direction. As a pastor, what most boggles my mind is when people come to church with agendas. When people come to church with, I think we should do it this way, or I think it should be that way, or I don't like that change and I want it to change back. And there's so many agendas. Imagine if everybody in this room had an agenda, nothing would happen. We'd be stuck in the rut of our agendas. We'd be immobilized. Might as well just sing a funeral dirge for the church, because you can't live as a church on individual agendas. You can only live when everybody's on the same page and everybody's willing to pull in the same direction. If everybody's on the same page and everybody pulls in the same direction, you can change the world. With God in the equation, you will change the world. God's will is about a future impact God is doing through you. God's will takes time, strategic planning, artistic inspiration, and passionate prayer. God's will takes personal sacrifice. God's will takes humility and passionate action. Passionate action. God's will is always over and above your will. Set your agenda aside. Live for His will in your life. God's will radicalize your life. You'll live at increasingly higher and higher levels of faith, which will help you to realize the depths of humility that need to be a part of the experience of living your days. And God's will never ends until you arrive in the kingdom that has no end. Tipping point lesson one: you will be challenged to believe something bigger than you've ever believed, because God is in the business of doing big things. It is His will to do big things. Tipping point lesson number two: you'll be challenged to get everyone to have one heart and one vision with you. Everyone, one heart and one vision with you. This portion of this morning's message is brought to you by ESPN and the Chicago Cubs. Okay, the Chicago Cubs won the World Series in 2016. And there was a method to that. There was a plan in action for that to happen after over 100 years. How did it happen? In the book, The Cubs Way, Joe Madden tells the story of how it happened. Joe Madden coaxed the Cubbies to the World Series, and these were his tipping point notes, written by hand on a card that he would carry around, and it was all written in purple ink. First, purple ink tipping point statement. C plus B plus L. C plus B plus L. Courage plus belief equals life. This is how we're going to play baseball. We're going to have the courage, and we're going to have the belief, and that's how we're going to live it out on the field every single time we get out on the field. But without courage, without believing in what we're doing, believing in ourselves as a team, nothing is really going to happen. Courage plus belief equals life. And then you have this interesting series of letters. DNP, TP, TE, TP. Do not permit the pressure to exceed the pleasure. Do not permit the pressure to exceed the pleasure. It means there's going to be a lot of pressure. What did Paul say in 2 Corinthians chapter 4? Hard pressed on every side. Hard pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Sounds like it was pretty hard. But he said, therefore, we do not lose heart. For this momentary light affliction is not to be compared to the glory that is to come. Do not permit the pressure to exceed the pleasure. On your journey, at your tipping point moment, on the journey to the future, wherever God is calling you, wherever God is calling you to do his will that he is accomplishing in you and through you, you always have to remember to take some joy along the way, to spend some time in celebration, to spend some time encouraging each other, to gather together just for prayer, to gather together to sit and listen to each other, tell the stories of the journey, the tipping point stories, which will be like a refreshment to our souls. Do not permit the pressure to exceed the pleasure. Do not forget we're on this journey together. DSB, do simple better. There's so many simple things. Catching a ground ball is simple. Do it better. Bunting appears to be simple. It's very, very difficult, but do it better. You know, run down the line to first base better. Be aware of what's going to happen next. Always know what you're going to do with the ball if it gets hit to you. Do simple better. Be present, not perfect. Always be in the game, but realize that you will make an error. You will make a mistake. You will strike out. You will drop a ball. Be present, but don't be perfect because you can never get there. It's just going to take being present for us to get to where we're trying to go. And then in honor of Don Zimmer, Z irreverent. I love this one. Manage without being afraid to take risks. Manage without being afraid to take risks. Because without taking risks, you're really just spinning your wheels. Without taking risks, you're living the same old life over and over again, one day at a time. 20 years of experience, which is really just 1 year of experience that's happened 20 times over and over and over again. Manage without being afraid to take risks. Take the risk. Take the shot. You always miss 100% of the shots you never take. And then here's his final tipping point moment for the Cubs in 2016. And it happened in spring training. He said this, embrace the target. We all have to set aside our personal agendas. We all have to do our jobs. We know we're not perfect, but can be present. We are our own little planet. We must rotate around the same goal. Embrace the target. Set aside personal agendas. As I said earlier, get rid of personal agendas. They just don't work. One goal, everybody together. Let's do this thing. John Ortberg once spoke at our church. It was a small gathering. And I'll never forget this. I can feel myself in the room with him right now. He said, when did God ever ask anyone to do anything that's easy? When did God ever? Read scripture. When did he ever ask anyone to do something that was going to be easy? You'll be challenged to get everyone to have one heart and one vision with you. You'll be challenged to believe something bigger than you've ever believed because God is in the business of doing big things. Tipping point lesson number 3. You will see the provision of God in tangible economic ways at the intersection of faith and life. You'll see the provision of God in tangible economic ways at the intersection of faith and life. I love to tell the story of how we bought a piece of property in Virginia Beach. The piece of property cost $1 million, and we didn't have $1 million. We had 20,000 some odd dollars in the bank at the time, which if you do the math, it doesn't work. But we rallied together and we raised enough to make a down payment on $1 million piece of property. And then we're paying $5,000 a month, $5,000 a month, $5,000 a month. And seemingly, you know, a parade of days and years that was never going to bring us to a church building. We're so far away from it. And then one day, the bank calls me and says, you are receiving an anonymous gift of $750,000. The property is paid off. And I remember telling the church that. I remember that Sunday. And I said, we're never supposed to know who gave this gift, $750,000, anonymous. But I know who gave the gift. And you could hear a pin drop in the room. I know who gave the gift. And everybody's leaning forward. And I said, God gave the gift. You will see the provision of God in tangible economic ways at the intersection of faith and life. You are doing something called the Next 40. Travis has been talking to me about it, and I've been excited to hear about it. And I'm in it with you. I'm your cheerleader. I'm praying with you. I want to see how this all comes together because it is so exciting. And you have three initiatives in the Next 40. The Worship Buddies, Ministry with Special Needs Children is the first initiative. And this is an amazing way to change a child's world, to come alongside of a child with your love and your compassion, and you're just being present with that child. It is just huge. Worship Buddies. And then there's the initiative of the church plant, the Eastside Church, with Doug and Karen. And that's just amazing. I know what that's like to start something from scratch, and there's so many challenges to surmount and so many prayers to be said. And that's a great initiative for all of you to do together. And then Thailand, establishing schools, churches, and training leaders in a country that's 94% Buddhist, pushing back the darkness on human trafficking. But you know what? Those are great looking initiatives. But stuff that looks good in a frame doesn't ever really have to happen unless there's one thing more that is added. Let me read you this quote from Beth Moore, one of my favorite speakers and authors. We've lost our theological minds to think it's enough for people of light to sit in the light, carry the light, show the light, preach the light, podcast the light, but not fight the darkness. It's like showing up in the ring, decked out, belted and gloved, and never throwing a punch. How silly would that look? Decked out, belted and gloved, and never throwing a punch. You know what these three initiatives need? They need a fourth initiative. And the fourth initiative is very simply you. You are the fourth initiative. The fourth initiative in the Next 40 campaign is you. You being a worship buddy. You being a part of this new church that is in the minds right now, so heavy, and hearts of Doug and Karen Bunn. You giving to all these initiatives, the Thailand initiative, the church plant, worship buddies. It's all one big initiative. As you give, as you make a statement, you are throwing punches. You are pushing back the darkness in this world because nothing ever happens without a fourth initiative. It's you. And at the chapel, you believe that it's a bottom-up work of God. It's not a top-down. It's everybody together. It's everyone together doing this. Travis put it this way. The Next 40 campaign is not simply three great initiatives the chapel will pursue. The Next 40 campaign is three great initiatives that will model the outward movement of the gospel Jesus longs to see in every disciple. In Jesus, God made the first move toward us. There's no such thing as an immobile disciple. An immobile disciple is belted and gloved and never throws a punch. There's no such thing as an immobile disciple because there's no such thing as an immobile God. The fourth initiative is you, everyone together. Let me show you what that looks like. In 1904, an artist named Sigismund Goetz painted an oil on canvas that he titled, He Was Despised and Rejected of Men. And this painting debuted in London. And there it is, 1904, debuted in London. And here's what was written about it. At the exhibition of the Royal Academy in London, the great canvas by Sigismund Goetz has created an artistic sensation, a powerful and terribly realistic presentment of Christ in a modern setting. Christ in a modern setting, 1904. And you look around, and there's a clergyman. He's just clerging away, not really paying attention to what's going on. And there's a woman of great stature in the community. She's wealthy. She's got power and position. And she's just into herself. And there's a crowd that's just going along with the culture. There's one woman who's got her hand up to her mouth, and she sees Jesus, and she is in awe, but I'm not sure she knows what to do or how to respond. There's a man reading a newspaper. There's a businessman getting ready to make a deal. How much different are we today? Not much different, really. 1904, on the cusp of 2019. In Acts chapter 17, Paul saw an inscription in Athens. That inscription, the artist gets put on that pedestal. You can't really see it here, but I encourage you to go ahead and Google this painting and look at it in detail. He put the inscription from Acts chapter 17 on the pedestal. And here it is. Men of Athens, I see that in every way you are religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription: to an unknown God. Now, what you worship as something unknown, I am going to proclaim to you. Getz knew that's where the action was. Getz knew that's what it was all about. Jesus giving his life for the world. Jesus giving his life for you. Is anyone at that tipping point? Is anyone ready to give his or her life to the one who gave his life for you? Votum Deo Ignoto is the Latin inscription, to an unknown God. And Paul says, let me tell you who that is, because I know him. A tipping point is where everything is on the line. Everything shifts. It can be expected or unexpected. It can enter stage left with joy or sorrow. It can be the agony or the ecstasy. And here you are at the tipping point. A new year and the next 40 is undoubtedly a tipping point. You will be challenged to believe something bigger than you've ever believed before, because God is in the business of doing big things. You'll be challenged to get everyone to have one heart and one vision with you. Everyone together. You will see the provision of God in tangible economic ways at the intersection of faith and life. When you show up, God shows up. Let me put this all in four words: believe, conceive, achieve, receive. Believe in the one who gave himself for you. Conceive in your mind what part of the next 40 God is calling you into. Is it worship buddies? Is it the new church? Is it praying for Doug and Karen? Is it being part of the initiative in Thailand to push back the darkness? When you give to the next 40, you are changing things. You are conceiving that there can be change because you are in it, achieving the results that God is giving into your hands, receiving what God is giving into your hands by his blessings. So what do you do? This one question remains. What do you do at the tipping point? Please take your card and look at it right now. Look at the front. There's a blank line. What do you do at this tipping point? You ask a simple question. What are you going to do that's going to last forever? What are you going to do that is going to last forever? God bless you.